I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, why has there been a spike of violence in Iraq? Mia Farrow speaks out for Syrian refugees in Lebanon. The U.S. says the Egyptian president should repudiate anti-Semitism remarks.
We completely reject these statements, as we do any language that espouses religious hatred.
And Yemen receives a record number of African refugees and migrants. It's all ahead. There is a surge of violence in Iraq. In a wave of attacks in Baghdad and northern Iraq, at least 29 people were killed today. We asked Daniel Serwer with the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies why there has been this spike.
It looks to me as if the violence is related to the tense political situation, which is mainly an issue in Baghdad, not in Kirkuk or Anbar. But what you're seeing is greatly heightened tensions between Kurds and Arabs, between Sunni and Shia.
Is this violence that we're seeing going to worsen before it gets better?
I am not in the violence prediction business. It could certainly get worse. Violence in Iraq has been much worse than it is today at times in the past, especially 2006, 2007. But it's unclear, frankly, whether violence is really up at this point or not. It's been more or less at a constant level with a lot of ups and downs since 2009. I think that it could get worse if the political situation isn't resolved. It could also get a lot better if the political situation is resolved, with local elections coming up in April and national elections next year. I'm afraid we're in for a bit more rather than a bit less violence.
Why are the sectarian lines increasingly seem to be divided?
I think what you're seeing is Prime Minister Maliki is moving in the direction for the next elections of a broad Shia alliance. And that is creating tensions with the Sunnis, who have participated in his government, especially via Iraqiya. And that's a real problem for the Sunnis because they just don't have the numbers to show well unless they are at least nominally in a cross-sectarian alliance. With the Kurds, there are still outstanding issues on oil and territory, and Maliki has been pressing hard against the Kurds in recent months, and the Kurds are reacting to some extent, though the attack today was an attack on a Kurdish political party in Kirkuk, who is responsible, it just isn't clear.
Aren't we going to see these same divisions when the elections come around?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what elections are about. They're about settling conflict through peaceful means, ballots, not bullets. But I'm afraid that the Iraqis haven't fully accepted the electoral process yet, and that's why you're seeing this continuation of sectarian violence.
Do you see any need for an international response to what's going on in Iraq, or should we all mind our own business?
I think it's mind your own business time, except for low-key diplomatic efforts, especially by the UN, but also by the Americans and some of the Europeans, to help the Iraqis find a modus vivendi, a way of living with each other. I don't think that the violence in Iraq comes even close to requiring any kind of military response or anything like that. The Iraqi state needs to respond to this in constructive ways. It hasn't found those ways so far, but I do believe it can find those ways if it looks for them.
Daniel Serwer of Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. A spokesman for Human Rights Watch in Beirut Tuesday said the organization has documented a new development in the use of cluster bombs by the Syrian government. Nadim Howry is the group's deputy director of the Middle East and North Africa.
What is new is that we have documented over the last 4 weeks the use of ground-launched cluster munitions. We have documented their use over the near the city of Idlib in northern Syria, but also in rural areas around Hama. These cluster munitions are the two types that we have found are produced in Egypt. We do not know when they were transferred or purchased by the Syrian government. It could be from the 1990s.
He said use of such weapons is a violation of international humanitarian law because they are indiscriminate weapons that do not distinguish between military and civilian targets. U.S. actress and UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador Mia Farrow says most Syrian refugees in Lebanon are women and children in desperate need of help during current winter conditions. Farrow pleaded for donations as she spoke to reporters after visiting Syrian refugee camps in Lebanon.
If I can convey to you, to people in my country, to wherever I can give interviews, and I know UNICEF has a lot lined up for me, if I can bring people to another level of knowing, you know, then I believe that people will respond. Because through no fault of their own, these people have fled the horror, leaving everything they loved and knew behind. And these are the most vulnerable victims of a war that is not of their making.
About 600,000 Syrians have fled the violence in their country to neighboring Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, and Iraq. The United Nations has said that about 1 million Syrians were going hungry because it was hard to get supplies into conflict zones, and the few government-approved aid agencies were stretched to the limit. The United States says Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi should repudiate remarks he made in 2010, calling on Egyptians to nurse our children and our grandchildren on hatred for Jews and Zionists. VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns has details.
State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland says Washington condemns the comments made by President Morsi at a time when he led the political wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. In one of the 2010 videos, Mr. Morsi said Egyptian children must feed on that hatred as a form of worshiping God.
The language that we've seen is deeply offensive. We completely reject these statements, as we do any language that espouses religious hatred.
In a separate 2010 interview, Mr. Morsi described Zionists as bloodsuckers who attack the Palestinians, these warmongers, the descendants of apes and pigs. Nuland says that kind of rhetoric's been used in the Middle East for far too long, and President Morsi should firmly repudiate his past comments.
We want to see President Morsi make absolutely clear to his own people, to the international community, that he respects people of all faiths, and that this type of rhetoric is not acceptable or productive in a democratic Egypt.
President Morsi has not commented publicly since video of his 2010 remarks was broadcast in Cairo last Friday. They've since spread to the internet and come at a tenuous time for U.S.-Egypt relations, especially as U.S. lawmakers consider withholding additional financial assistance. Since he took office in June of 2012, Nuland says President Morsi has reaffirmed his commitment to Egypt's peace treaty with Israel in word and deed.
He's been willing to work with us and with Israel on shared objectives, including the ceasefire in Gaza. He's been committed to our bilateral relationship. That is the basis on which we are continuing to work together going forward.
In his 2010 remarks, Mr. Morsi criticized what he said are Zionist supporters, America, France, and Europe, singling out President Barack Obama, whom he called a liar for promising the Arab world empty, meaningless words. Mr. Morsi took power as Egypt's first democratically elected president. Scott Stearns, VOA News, the State Department.
The UN Refugee Agency says a record number of African refugees and migrants made the perilous journey last year by sea from the Horn of Africa to Yemen. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva. The UNHCR says this is the largest influx to Yemen since 2006, when the agency began compiling statistics.
The UN Refugee Agency says a record 107,500 African refugees and migrants from the Horn of Africa made the journey across the Gulf of Aden to Yemen last year. This broke the previous record of more than 103,000 in 2011. The UNHCR says 8 of every 10 arrivals last year were Ethiopian nationals. Somali refugees made up the rest. Despite the dangers, the agency says the Africans come in great numbers in a desperate bid to escape poverty and conflict. It says many migrants use Yemen as a transit stop en route to other Gulf states where they hope to find work. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says the Africans encounter many difficulties both during and after their journey.
Boats crossing to Yemen are often packed well beyond capacity, and smugglers, to avoid the Yemeni Coast Guard, force passengers into the water offshore, often with tragic consequences. It's estimated that at least 100 people drowned or have gone missing in various incidents and shipwrecks in the Gulf of Aden and Red Sea last year alone.
Edward says new arrivals also are exposed to exploitation, violence, and sexual abuse. He says the situation is particularly difficult along the Red Sea coast. He notes the strong network of smugglers and traffickers in Yemen and their counterparts at sea make it difficult for the UNHCR to reach the new arrivals. Edward says Yemeni smugglers and traffickers often are waiting on the coast to receive new arrivals, mainly targeting Ethiopian nationals who want to travel to other Gulf states. He says efforts to protect them are often frustrated.
In Yemen, our teams and our Yemeni partners do daily patrols of the beaches to provide assistance to all new arrivals that pass through strategically positioned reception and transit centres. However, there are substantial difficulties in responding to the various protection needs that new arrivals face on arrival.
Edward says all Somali arrivals are automatically recognized as refugees by Yemeni authorities. He says the UNHCR screens Ethiopians and other nationalities seeking asylum to see if they should be recognized as refugees. The UNHCR praises Yemen for its hospitality toward refugees, despite the country's economic and security difficulties. The country currently hosts over 236,000 refugees, virtually all of them of Somali origin. There also are more than 300,000 internally displaced Yemeni civilians in the north due to recurring conflict since 2004. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.